Good morning.
Good morning.
Even though I've given talks a fair amount, I noticed whenever I go to another temple, I experience some nervousness, like I'm playing an away game. So. First off, I would like to begin by thanking everyone in the Houston Zen Center for your support of the San Antonio Zen Center. Even though we've been around since 2004, we finally bought a place and had our opening ceremony a couple weeks ago. And it was due in no small part to the generosity of many of you that gave donations. So you'll always be part of San Antonio Zen Center. Yeah, so it's quite a nice, manifestation of interdependence. Plus, we also have the benefit of having a relationship with Houston Zen Center and Austin Center, Zen Center as well, too. Galen is one of my mentors, and Kosho is my root teacher in Austin. So, as Dave said, we'll take over Dallas next. For a long time, actually quite a long time, I resisted Dogen's teachings. Particularly at Tassajara, when we would chant the Genjo Koan, and you know, we'd been up since 3:50, and I was just kind of barely conscious as we were doing morning service. What I didn't realize at the time is that's actually the best time to hear Dogen. Before the thinking mind is fully online. So it's very much like Suzuki Roshi talked about. Walking in a fog and realizing that you're soaked. You don't realize it at the time as you're walking through the fog. But Dogen Zenji permeates our practice, a lot of our teachings. So I have been hearing the call. And actually, one of the books that actually helped me the most is a book called Journeys into Emptiness. I don't know if any of you read it, but it's looking at Carl Jung, Dogen, and Thomas Merton, and short biographies of their lives. And what really helped me was seeing the personal. Seeing him as a person. Because before, when you read like the Tenzo Kyokun or the Eihei Shingi, it can feel a little fussy. It can feel like do this, don't do that. But when we really look at his life and see everything that he went through, we can begin to connect. Particularly with all the suffering that he had in his life and all of his missteps in practice. So that was a book that was very helpful to me. I think Thomas Gunn, is the author. And then finding the right fascicles as well, too. And there is one that I had studied before in Ginzawa with Shoaku Okamura Roshi, but it didn't get in. It took a while. So I came across this one not too long ago, and it sinks, and it really, for me, sunk in. And this is only a Buddha and a Buddha. Yue Butsu, Yo Butsu. So he starts off like right out of the gate. He says, when you realize Buddha Dharma, you do not think this is realization just as I expected. Even if you think so, realization inevitably differs from your expectation. So realization, reality versus expectation. Right? So how we think about realization, how we think about reality, has absolutely nothing to do with reality. Right? It's just we're thinking about it. And in thinking about it, we set up expectations about reality or realization. Even when we come to practice, we may think, oh, you know, can't wait to, you know, gain enlightenment, whatever we think that is. Right? We think we're going to be enlightened. Usually when we begin practice, we just want to be anybody but who we are. We just want to be some new and improved version. Not even, maybe not even a version, just like a trade-in. You know, I want to trade in this self for a new one. So this is where it gets interesting right off the bat, because this is a realization just as I expected. So this... he's kind of warning us. Because we want to think of realization as a noun, something that you can have, something that's tangible, just as we think the self is something tangible. Right? This inherent sense, this unchanging sense of self, is something completely palpable. Almost graspable. And the reality is that reality is anything but a noun. It's my experience, and this is the beauty of Dharma talks. People just get to talk about their experience of something, how they understand something. So my understanding of it is that actually realization, reality, is a verb. Everything is a verb. Because it's active, it's dynamic. So whenever we think this is realization just as I expected, we're locking it in to something that that it's not, or we think we're locking it in. That's where we run into trouble. We think we're locking it in. So so whatever we think about reality has nothing to do with reality itself. So our thoughts are just our thoughts. Our thoughts about reality are just thoughts. Nothing more. Nothing more. Just as reality is just reality. It can't be anything else but. Just as our thoughts can't be anything else but thoughts. So the reality of reality is beyond our thoughts. And our thoughts are reality. This is where we can start to feel a little twisted up. So realization is not like your conception of it. Accordingly, realization cannot take place as previously conceived. When you realize Buddha Dharma, you do not consider how realization came about. So actually when we wake up, we're not thinking about how does it compare to what we were thinking about it. We're just awake in that moment. Whenever we do start thinking about it, we're just thinking, and we're back into the cycle. The trick is knowing when we're thinking about it, knowing that we have our expectations about it. knowing when we're operating under that set of expectations. So when a situation or someone is not in accord with our expectations or our thoughts about the way things should be, we usually suffer quite a bit. And so, a lot of times we make them suffer as well. Do you ever notice that? You know? Like, oh, you're not who I thought I was. You know? So he says, reflect on this. What you think one way or another before realization is not a help for realization. So no matter what we're thinking about reality, good, bad, neutral, has absolutely nothing to do with what realization is. And it actually doesn't, thinking doesn't help so much in a lot of ways, because we get caught up in the thinking rather than meeting our life. And this is what all of our teachings are about, is waking up to our life, being involved in our life rather than just in our thoughts. And this is nothing, you know, this is not a news flash to anyone. We're quite intimate with our thoughts. We're quite intimate with our expectations. But often we're not so intimate with reality. We may be intimate with the suffering that our thoughts cause. But we're actually not so intimate with reality itself. So he goes on to give us a little bit more help. He says, however, it is worth noticing that what you think one way or another is not a help for realization. For this reason, you become cautious not to be small-minded. Indeed, if realization came forth by the power of your prior thoughts, it would not be trustworthy. So it's a really elegant way of basically saying, whenever we are operating in thinking, we are functioning from a place of our karmic conditioning. So we're walking around with all these filters. So, and these filters are created by our experience, our karma, conditioning, and there are some that would even say by our genetics. And the reason that, in my understanding of this, in my experience of this, is that the reason that prior thoughts aren't a help for realization, that they would not be trustworthy, is because it's very limited. Our thoughts are very limited in scope. Thoughts are actually nothing compared to the detail of realization, the detail of reality. So if we know that we're looking at things through filters, through karmic conditioning, we know that's not going to be a help. That's not going to be a help of meeting our life, of being intimate with all beings, being intimate with the minutia of our lives. And sometimes we have to realize this over and over and over again. Actually, no matter how long we've been practicing. It's my experience that the longer that we practice, the quicker we are to realize it. Oh, there I go again. There I go again. I'm sorry. So, and this is why he says that it's not trustworthy. Right? Why the prior thoughts would not be trustworthy. If realization came about as a result of prior thoughts, it would not be trustworthy. Because it would still be a conditioned existence. So Dogen Zenji goes on a little bit further and says, spring has the feeling of spring, and autumn has the look of autumn. There's no escaping it. So when you want spring or autumn to be different from what it is, notice that it can only be as it is. Or when you want to keep spring or autumn as it is, reflect that it has no unchanging nature. For those of us that like cold weather, you know, we suffer a lot in the summer, in Texas summer. You know. For those that love heat, really suffer in February. I think, oh, I wish if it could only be July again. And if this sounds familiar, this spring has a feeling of spring and autumn has the feeling of autumn. It's very much in Genyo Koan when he says that autumn is not, I'm going to paraphrase here, fall is not the end, or is not the end of summer, nor is spring the end of winter. So, it's really important that when we're in autumn, to be in autumn. And not to hold on to autumn, because it has no unchanging nature, as he says. And vice versa. So a lot of this fascicle is actually just about our thoughts, about how unreliable our thoughts are. Both in terms of the experience that we're having, in terms of our expectations, and in terms of reality. Just to become aware of this, and this is his encouragement to us. Just to let thoughts be thoughts. When realization happens, it happens. And at some point we begin thinking again, and we're back. And we can't really know realization in the conventional way, in the conventional way of our being, in terms of our conditioning, our thoughts, karmic filters. So we experience it. We wake up from the delusion of our thoughts. This is our encouragement. This is the encouragement that's been handed down from ancestors from the very beginning. From the very beginning when the Buddha sat under the Bo tree and Mara shows up and he says, I know you. In doing so, what Dogen Zenji is encouraging us to do is not to be a slave, not to be, that's as the koan says, you know, like on the horse where the horse is in charge. Talking about habit energy. Said it's an encouragement for us to know under what circumstances we're living at any given time. Just as the old master says to himself, Are you awake? Yes. Just don't be fooled. I won't. So when we have this proper relationship, when we are intimate to the function of our lives, then that's it's the basis for our realization, for our awakening. Just as long as we know that's what's happening. We'll finish with some words that he quotes from another master. He says, an ancient Buddha said, mountains are mountains, waters are waters. These words do not mean mountains are mountains. They mean mountains are mountains. In this way, investigate mountains thoroughly. When you investigate mountains thoroughly, this becomes the endeavor within the mountains. Such mountains and waters of themselves become wise persons and sages. Thank you very much.